LT, let's start in Vancouver. Now we'll get Strutty's thoughts on this. Jake Virtanen comes in. You're 23. You've had two full seasons in the NHL. You had 15 goals last year. And on the first day of camp, you get put in the third group because you're not in good enough shape. Like, that's just inexcusable.
I remember Dave Lumley telling me a story about after his rookie year, he came to camp. He had a great winter. Might have been after the first Stanley Cup victory. Either way, he came in his camp in terrible shape. Admittedly, like based on what he told me, and Slats just tore a strip off him all year. Bag skates, fourth line. Sunday afternoon in Hartford, you're playing 26 minutes, and he did it all year long, and that was his lesson. So maybe they're going to go a little old school in Vancouver, but here's the problem. Virtanen isn't, like, he's not so established that he should be messing around like this. It's interesting, but I'm a little surprised because he's not a made man yet. He hasn't gotten the big dollars yet.
You're too nice. I saw this today, and I'm like, why do I want a player on a team I have to beg to get in shape? Why? I don't want that guy because I've got to motivate him more than the other night, or I guess in this case, 22 other players on my team. I saw a quote from Green saying, you know, he had certain goals to reach. We agreed on, and if he didn't reach those goals, he'd be in the third group. So he knew the parameters. It wasn't like this is a surprise. I mean,
are you saying trade him for Puljujarvi?
No, I'm trading Puljujarvi for Julius Honka. I'm training for everybody. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, you guys. Jeez, calm down. No, but low tide, I mean, honestly, in the club dynamic, why should I as a coach have to worry about a guy who's not in shape?
Well, he's your guy, though. Like, here's what I don't understand. What was Virtanen thinking? He's not so established he can afford to do this. Who was it? Was it Jake Dodson? They actually, in Tampa Bay, they just released him. They just outright released him. I don't think they'll do that in Vancouver because, you know, who knows, you know, who the next man up is in Vancouver. It might be Orland Kurtenback. But at some point, you know, that's it's a disappointment for sure.
But I guess my point is this. You're trying to create a culture where everyone has to contribute and pull on. Like, we used to call all the time, we all got to pull on the rope together, right? Like a tiger, we all got to pull on the rope. And this guy waddles into camp, you know, by all reports, out of shape. Why do I want this guy on my team? As a coach, I'd go upstairs and say, listen, we've given this guy chances. I think it's time for him to find a new address. Let's move him out.
Well, I remember him in rookie camp a couple of, like for too long. He was there for a little bit and then a little bit longer. And that's why, like, he's sort of in my mind. Like, he was drafted in 2014, number 6 overall. Oh, my. And so he's played 70 games a year ago, had his best year. It took him a while during his entry-level deal to get going here. So he's just not established enough. That I'm really surprised by. I really am, because he has not made a gigantic amount of money in hockey. And as you say, he could be in Florida. He could be on the Panthers by the end of next week.
Well, the Panthers are probably a better team than Canucks. He'd probably prefer that. But yeah, so let's go quickly. I see a lot of people, like, every name someone asks for a trade, oh, the Oilers should get this guy. Like, I don't see any reason why the Oilers would be interested in Honka. Do you?
No. You've drafted and developed Bear, Jones, Lagesson. They're all waiver eligible this time next year. You have to figure out who's what. You've got Bouchard. You've got Joel Pearson. I don't think Honka's better than any of those guys. Maybe he is, but I don't think it's clear that he is. If you were a team that needed a right-handed defenseman, like, I like Benning way better than Honka, and if you didn't have Benning, maybe you do that deal. But for the Oilers, I don't really see the point. Maybe, and Strutty knows more about defense than I do, so maybe there's a reason, yeah. But I don't see it.
No, you know what's funny is that as we're joined by Alan Mitchell from the Lowdown with Low Tide, you know, I remember watching him play in the World Juniors, and I thought he was a good player there. But he didn't dress, I think, for what was it, like the last 30 games in Dallas.
Yeah.
Like, do you think that the team didn't put out an email to everyone, say, hey, if you want him, come and get him. You know, you can take him for nothing. And he hasn't signed a contract, and now he's requested a trade. So, honestly, if you're interested in this player, I would wait, and you could probably pick him up off on waivers, although he doesn't have a contract. So I guess does he even go on waivers if you don't have a contract? I don't know how that works. But I'm saying that the cost will be down to almost nothing. And I saw someone suggest trading Jesse Puljujärvi for him. I'm like, why? Why would you make that trade? You can get him for free in pretty short order. I want to switch gears. Either way, low tide. Take a look at up front. Sam Gagne today was riding shotgun with Neil and Nugent Hopkins. Is this something you think is a surprise or a revolving spot? What do you see in that? It will be, I'm assuming, a highly coveted position for all the wingers on this team.
We can get carried away. If we see it like in the preseason, then they're clearly thinking about it. It's a little unusual for me, and here's why. Because I like Sam Gagne. He's one of my favorite players when he was brought here, but he's not a fast guy, and he's not an exceptional defensive player. That said, the coach knows him, and the coach knows what he can get out of him. So I was surprised by it, but I'm pleased if it works because it solves some problems, although I don't your next problem is what to do with Alex Chiasson if Gagne and Neil are Nugent's wingers. I'd be concerned about the foot speed of the line and then also the two-way ability of the line aside from Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah, so let's drop it down then. So today it was who's with Cooper Marody and Thomas Jurco. Two guys are most likely starting the minors. So then that's the makings of your third line with, is it then Sheehan and Jujhar and Chiasson? Is that your third line then, what you're looking at?
Well, I like the sounds of that. I don't know, Archibald, I think, was there today with Kara and
he was.
So I think he'd also be a good one. Maybe Chason's on the fourth line. It seems like a waste, but maybe he can play power play time in the fourth line. But I right now sort of like the sounds of that third line with from what I know of Josh Archibald, he can play a two-way game too, and Carr is that big heavy guy. I sort of like the sounds of that line.
Well, that line, Dave Tippett didn't want to say third and fourth, and the reality is if you look at offensively, Archibald, Kara, and Sheehan likely wouldn't outproduce the other line. Which is and the one thing about Alex Chiasson, and I really like the season he had last year, but I think when people think of Alex Chiasson, his 5-on-5 production was pretty much what he'd done at other times in his career. The 8 power play goals is really what augmented his total goal total. But, you know, he scored 12 goals last year, 5-on-5. He scored 11 with Calgary, right? His point totals 5-on-5, where is basically what I meant, were the same, because he had 20 points in 14, he had 20 points in 17, he had 20 points in 19, he had 18 points in 15. So when I look at Alex Chiasson, you know, he's realistically, if we eliminate his power play goals, he's kind of, you know, a bottom six forward, which is no problem. And if he's a bottom six forward and maybe can give you 12 to 14 goals again, maybe 15, 5-on-5, you'd be very happy.
Yeah, and I think that's what Ken Holland has said all along, is that you know, if you don't have a bunch of 20-goal scorers, get a bunch of guys who can get 15. And that's, like, if we remember the third and fourth line a year ago, man, they could not shoot the puck in the ocean to get a goal. And so this group looks more encouraging. I know it seems like a small incremental amount, you know, to go from whomever to Archibald, who might get 12, or as you say, maybe Chiasson gets, you know, 10 at even strength and piles on the power play goals. But that actually would be a substantial improvement over last year on the third and fourth lines.
You know, a guy who kind of caught my eye was Gaetan Haas, a guy he can skate, obviously, that right shot. There was quite a few right shooters actually on the ice today. I don't know. You can't read anything to one day, but he moved quick, and you can see he's defensively responsible. And that fourth line, if you're looking for a right shot forward as a center, you know, Colby Cave doesn't have that, unfortunately for him.
Yeah, I think Haas, you know, probably has the inside track on the fourth line center just because he is right-handed, right? Like they need more of those guys. And you know, he's an older player, probably has some utility if they can maybe get some PK time out of him, even if it's later on in the year when he gets comfortable. The fact that he's right-handed, experienced, and can scoot, I think fits. Those are all three really good things for him.
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, so then you have to figure out that fourth line look. If you have the third line you're talking about, then that puts Chiasson, a right shot, with Haas, a right shot, and then who slips in there? We haven't even talked about Nygaard or Granlund.
Yeah. Well, Granlund, I think, has to be on the team, right? Like, I think he's going to be a penalty kill guy, so he'd probably be the well, in this case, one of the bottom six left wings along with Kara on the third, well, the line that we're talking about,
right,
with Archibald and the former Red Wing. So, I mean, I sort of like that set, to be honest with you. I guess you can mix and match the specific names on the lines, but I like those six guys, and I like Nygaard, too, because he's got some foot speed.
Well, you look at it, Nygaard and Holland. Do you think both of them can realistically, like, I'm not sure both can be in the starting lineup.
Who's that? Nygaard and
Haas, both together on opening night. Yeah. I could see them both on the 14-man roster, but I also could see one of them potentially going back to Europe.
Yeah, I remember when Nygaard was signed, there were a lot of teams after him, not so much Haas. And initially I thought, well, you know, it probably means that if Haas doesn't make the team, then he probably goes back. But it probably applies to both of them, right? Because, you know, I mean, Nygaard came over here to make it to the NHL. He was a very good player in the SHL, in the Swedish league. He was the second leading scorer. So if he can't make the team initially, maybe you try to trade him to one of those other interested teams, and then he maybe makes the decision about whether to play in Bakersfield or go back home.
I got to say, and I know we got to go, but as I was sitting there today, since I've become a member of the media where I know everything,
yes,
it's the most interesting training camp I've been a part of, because there's so many wild cards. You know, in past years, you could say, okay, maybe one or two guys on the bubble. But right now, I feel almost anyone we named there, but within reason, could be someone who's on the bubble. But then even where do they play within that lineup? And for me, it's actually really interesting to see if they can create something right now out of really a dog's breakfast. We don't know what we got here.
Well, and the other thing is that, like, Holland and Tippett are, like, they're brand new. It's all first blush for them, right? And Holland liked Haas, and they obviously, you know, had Nygaard on a list that they liked too. So he's bringing a team to camp that, you know, a guy like Nygaard might be fresher in Holland's mind than a Cooper Marody. So, you know, they're obviously not going to prejudge, but they have a little more intel on the guys that they were familiar with before they got here, and that will be interesting, because I think the initial example of that is Gagné on the second line. It's not too much of a stretch to say he might be up there partly, at least in part, because Coach Dave Tippett knows who he is.
It's interesting when you break down all the line combos they had today, and I understand it's only day one of skating, and what we saw today doesn't mean how it's going to go. But when I think most of us say, okay, you've got McDavid and Nugent Hopkins, 1-2 centers. Riley Sheahan is your whatever fourth line, call him whatever line, I don't really care. But he's the other center, is your big heavy line. That basically leaves Marody and Gaetan Haas right now, because I'm not sure Colby Cave has the offensive potential to be in that conversation. Do you guys see the same thing? Is it kind of Haas and Marody, and one of them is going to win that job?
Yeah, I think here's the problem for Cave is one of the reasons why you'd value him is that he's pretty good on the faceoffs. But now they go out and they sign the center, former Red Wing, can never remember his name, and he does that well as well, and he also penalty kills. So now you've got a bit better skater, a more veteran guy, and a guy who's going to make the team over Cave. And then you've got Haas, who's a right-handed guy. So I think he's in a little bit tough. Marody, I mean, he could make it on the right side too, and he's a different player. He can offer some offense, but that's what we'll see. He'll have to, I assume he'll be a guy who plays at least a little bit here in the next week or so, maybe one or two in the first three or four games. And Marody and Benson and those guys are going to have to show quickly, but I think early on I think if we went with those four centers and said it's those four and maybe Cave is a fifth, we might not be far off.
LT, have a good weekend.
All right, I just wanted to say I happened to be at the McLennan roast this week, and I knew Jason Strudwick would be funny. I was surprised he was intentionally funny, though. I thought, because I've seen Struddy be funny by accident, you know, making a mistake, yeah, or blurting something out or whatever, but he was genuinely funny on purpose, and I just want to congratulate you, because I had not seen that.
You know, buddy, I really appreciate it, but I don't appreciate the text you sent to me the next day where you said, you know, you still slurred just like you do on radio. So the roast, what, you were supposed to chirp me. You're supposed to say, hey, thanks for a good time, Struddy.
I did, but you weren't listening to any of the people who were heckling you. So, you know. What was I going to do?
You know what's funny? During that the roast, I don't hardly remember anything because I was so concerned about what I was going to say and what everybody else is doing. It's like a blur. Whereas mine, I have way more memory, like recollection of what happened.
Well, I've emceed many of those things, and I can tell you, in all honesty, sincerely, you were absolutely hilarious.
Oh, thanks a lot, buddy. That's nice of you to say.
All right. Sorry, but I saw Jason Greger there, too, but I got to go. So you guys have a great day.